Boy, what a great, pleasant treat we have for you off the top. A guy who, to me, is Hoops. When you think about Hoops, and you think about Bruce Pearl's time here, you think about Steve Forbes and the tremendous impact that he had during Bruce Pearl's tenure here. Steve Forbes landed on his feet and then some. You know, the staff had their deal with the NCAA, their show cause deal, and Steve had a good opportunity to go down and coach in the junior college ranks at a good junior college job. He's taken it, though, and he's made it into a great junior college job as we welcome Steve Forbes to the program, who's now, ladies and gentlemen, at Northwest Florida State. Coach, how you doing? Good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. It's good to be on here. And for the fans that wonder, well, what the heck's Northwest Florida, probably 75% of the people in Knoxville have been to Destin, and I'm about 10 minutes across the bridge from Destin, so it's a really good place to be.
Could be worse, you know?
Oh, could be a lot worse, but trust me, I've been there. I've been in some of those spots. So it's I lived in Moscow, Idaho, and Ruston, Louisiana, so I could tell you that there's worse spots than this.
You guys are 57-4 in your 2 years there. Coach, what was that program the previous couple years? And by the way, you went to the NJCAA title game last year. What was the track record of that program before you got there?
Well, it was really good, Tony. You know, Bruce Stewart was the coach here before me, and I don't know if people remember Bruce, but, you know, he had a great run at Middle Tennessee as the head basketball coach. You know, back 15 years ago, went to the NCAA tournament a few times. He'd been here 13 years and done a really good job. In fact, Northwest Florida's been ranked in the top 25 in the JUCO rankings since October 26, 2009. That tells you what kind of run they've had. Now, they haven't made that run to the national title in a while like we did last year, and it was a great run. And, you know, we got beat by a guy that every ball fan probably seen this year, Marshall Henderson. You know, he scored 32 on us in the national championship game, and we couldn't do a whole lot with him, and we got beat by South Plains out of Texas.
You're not surprised by his impact on the Division I level?
Oh, not his shooting. No, not at all. He can really shoot it, and he can move without the ball. You know, he's a guy, it's hard to guard. You know, and I had a couple really good defenders last year that could, our team was really good defensively, and we just couldn't do a lot with him. He doesn't need a lot of space to get shots off, and he can really move well without the ball. So, I wasn't surprised. I know he's a high-volume shooter, and you know, a lot of times, Tony, kids, they don't make the right choices when they get recruited. They go places where they don't fit, you know, and I think Andy was a good fit for Marshall just by giving him the opportunity to get volume shots, because a guy like that needs volume shots. And I told a kid one time, Casey Mitchell, we were recruiting him at Tennessee, and he ended up going to West Virginia. But I told him, I said, you need Bruce Pearl more than Bruce Pearl needs you. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you need somebody to let you shoot the ball. You know, and then he went and he picked West Virginia with Coach Huggs and never got to shoot the ball. So, you know, some kids don't make the right choice. And I thought Marshall made a really good choice going to Ole Miss.
You've got a guy, Chris Jones, you know, here's a guy that Dave Tellep's saying is the top junior college player of the past decade. You've been able to attract some serious talent there, and I know with that has come up kind of a bright spotlight. A ton of coaches have been on your campus. New York Times article, by the way, congratulations on that, man. That was a unbelievable write-up a couple days ago.
I appreciate you saying that. When the New York Times called me about a month ago, I was a little apprehensive for good reason. You know, a lot of times they don't write pieces that are the nicest about people, you know, and I wasn't willing, the past is the past, and I'm accountable for what happened, and I understand it and all that. I just didn't want to relive it, and, you know, I didn't want to have to rehash it again in the newspaper, but that's not what he really wanted to do, and so we did. It was good. I enjoyed doing it, and, you know, from a guy that graduated with 32 people in high school, you know, it was kind of neat to have an article in the New York Times, and so it was good exposure for our program. You know, and for JUCO basketball as well. And so I was I was glad to do it.
You know, it's funny. I know you're feeling. I come from a real small school myself, and I've seen my name in places like USA Today and a couple things and Sporting News and places like that through the years, and you kind of have to pinch yourself and go, geez Louise, what's going on here? But the funny thing is when you get, anytime you do an interview, as you're saying, with a place like the Times, you do open yourself up
sure.
for them to rip open the wounds, do what the media loves to do. All in all, though, Steve, I got to tell you, I thought that was a tremendous article, man. Just a terrific article by Matt Giles.
I agree. I didn't know Matt previously. I thought he was good. He was very thorough. We did three separate interviews for over an hour. You know,
impressive.
Each time he went way, way back into when I started coaching and talked to a lot of people. And, you know, as well as I do, you know, when you do things like that, there's a lot of things that get left out, too. You know, there was a lot of things we talked about that didn't, you know, get in the article, but I was more than glad to talk to him about. And, you know, I was appreciative of the fact that he was very thorough with what he was doing. He wasn't just kind of asking the standard questions, you know. He was going deep into and interviewing kids that I had coached 20 years ago, you know. And so it was good. It was really good. And, you know, I think that, you know, it has a lot, it says a lot about the players that we have here and the staff that I have. You know, Jason's here with me, and we wouldn't be 57-4 without him. I mean, he's one of the best coaches in the country as far as, you know, X's and O's. I mean, he's really, really good, and you know that. And so I'm very fortunate and blessed to have him. And I have Chris Jones, who's the best JUCO player in the country. And then we've got some really good players, other really good players around him. And so it has been a pretty good run here for 2 years.
What do you wish would have appeared in that article? If something didn't make it in there, what would you have liked to have appeared there?
Well, I guess, like, you know, that I'm a good example for my players. And that's probably why it works here for me at junior college, because I'm here for a reason. You know, we're all here for a reason. We all have a story. And it's not that, you know, it's not that you're here because something has happened in your past academically for the kids, or they're not quite good enough, but that's okay. You just come here and you gotta move forward. You gotta fix your problem. You know, if you get knocked down, you got to get back up and start swinging. And that's what happens in life, you know. And I think that's a good example. You know, I tell the kids that all the time. I got fired from a job. You saw me playing, coaching on television. You know, but I'm here. But here's the deal. Either you can lay down and you can cry about it and you can blame people, or you can get up, be accountable, and start swinging. You know, and that's what I chose to do. And I think, you know, I think that's what my players, they see that as an example. I believe that rubs off on them.
No, the reality is, I mean, the profession you've chosen is a volatile one.
Yeah.
Lives are constantly turned upside down. Sometimes it's your fault, sometimes it's not. And sometimes things don't always end the way you want them to end. You know, you told me something a couple years ago before you started down there that sort of stuck with me. You said, hey, look. You said, man, I'm not making big money here compared to my profession. You said, but I'm in Destin, Florida. My family's healthy. I don't have any complaints. There are people out there in a lot worse shape than I have it. And there, you know what? There's a lot of truth to that, man. For everybody that's not pushing up daisies today, there's a lot of truth to that. Just to be alive, you know?
Question. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. You know, there's speculation. You know, even in the article that, you know, when are you going to go back to Division I? Are you going to go back to Shane?
Right.
I've asked this question, and I'll ask you the same question. I've never got a solid answer on it. What's the price tag for quality of life? You know, what is the amount of money that you can put on quality of life? And my quality, not that I had a bad quality of life in Knoxville, because I had a great quality of life. I love my job.
I understand.
I love coaching there. But there's just a different pace for my life here. And, you know, so I don't know that the answer to that, you know, and I don't know what it'll take to maybe or get me out of here. Maybe they never will. Bruce came here, you know, Coach Stewart came here 13, 15 years ago, and I don't think he planned on being here forever. You know, he was coming from being a head Division I coach. He'd been a head coach in the CBA, but he stayed here. Unfortunately, his life ended here because he got sick and passed away, but he was never going to leave. And so there's something to be said for that, and I don't know the answer to it. You know, I do know that if the offer comes and I feel good about it, I'll do it because I feel like it's the right thing to do. I had a Pac 10 and or Pac 12, whatever it's called now, and a Big 12 offer last summer, but I just didn't feel comfortable, you know, with that. And so I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
Can't beat happy, man. You know, I've heard people say that.
And I can go over to the back porch or AJ's or the beach here pretty regularly here in about a week, you know, and so I can't beat that either.
It could be worse. Let's talk for a second here about a couple guys you intersected with in your past, and specifically Jordan McRae. I'll take you back to an interview we had with you a couple years ago. You said, hey, look, we left some pretty good pieces behind. You said one of those guys is going to blossom into a pro, and he's going to be a very good player. And I kind of snickered at the time. But Jordy Mack's proving you right, man.
Well, you know, Jordy's issues when I was there was just maturity, physically and mentally. You know, and I think Coach Martin has done a great job, you know, bringing him along in both those areas. You know, Jordy's not ever going to be a really physically looking strong guy, but I think he's a little bit wiry strong, and I think mentally he's gotten so much more under control, you know, with his emotions. Jordy can score, man. That guy can always score. You know, I've seen him in high school do those things, and saw him on the road in AAU do those things. So he could always make buckets, and he was tall. You know, and he always liked tall guys that can shoot, you know, and he could do it. And so, you know, he's having a heck of a year. I've had a chance to see him play a few times, not every game, but I try to catch him when I can. And, you know, he's just a guy that he's hard to guard because he can, you know, he can shoot over you. And it looks like to me that the staff has done a good job of developing him, driving the ball to the basket and getting fouled. He's getting to the line a lot too, which makes him really hard to guard.
Yeah, he's like one of those guys right now, like a classic scorer. Who's mm-hmm. taken on that mentality, who can really deal. But to your point, used to when he would, you know, make a turnover, do some silly things, and everybody's going to turn the ball over, but some more than others, but used to be a time where he would hang his head. You don't see that from him now. He's almost like this guy that's, you know, does that, you think that comes from coaching? You think that comes from Martin and his staff? And
I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, you have to develop a next play mentality. You know, and Jordy didn't have a next play mentality when he came to Tennessee. And you know, we knew that. I mean, that's part of it. And, you know, he would make a mistake. You're spot on. He'd make a mistake, and then he would let it hang over him for the next three or four plays. You know, and that's a problem. So I think part of it is, you grow up, you know, and you get older and you see how things are done the right way. But I also think it's coaching and it's counseling. It's toughness in practice, you know, putting them in situations in practice where they have to be accountable and deal with that. And then I think it carries over to the games. And I've never seen Tennessee practice, but my guess is they're probably pretty tough. And I think that's a reflection of the kids on the court. And so, I think you have to give the staff, credit for his maturity level. And once he got all that together, you know, he had all the talent in the world. You know, people say, well, why didn't those guys play? You know, they didn't play. Well, they were freshmen. We had seniors. We had upperclassmen that were ahead of them. That's when you have a real program, is when you have really good players that are going to play their junior, senior year, and then you have good players behind them getting ready to play. You know, and so that's what Trey and Jordy fell into as freshmen.
The guy who should have played when you were here is Maimon. That's the guy nobody can, and you're not even going to defend that. Nobody can defend that. He should have been playing.
You know, it is what it is. And it, you know, this guy was just bad.
Exactly.
Well, to his credit, he didn't let it affect him. You
That's
know,
right.
He came back.
That's exactly right.
You know, he came back with a great attitude and had a great year. And unfortunately, you know, got hurt, you know, this year. And so hopefully, you know, he'll be able to come back and play next year and have a great senior year and very talented young man and, you know, built like a guy that I'm sure Coach Jones would probably like to get out there on the football field because he's a man. And so, I hope for him to have a great senior year, you know, like you do for all your kids.
Let me ask you something about the game as a whole. We've seen this year where scoring is sort of at a low clip in the modern era since the mid-60s. And you see these games where teams will have 14, 18, 16 points at the half. You know, it looks like the pre-shot clock days when I was a kid growing up outside of Philadelphia, and you'd see some of those scores like that. And you know, I just wonder from your end, what's going on with the game at all levels that's leading to this? Some say the game's getting too physical. Some say these guys aren't as they're better athletes, but they're not as skilled as they once were. Do you think any adjustments need to be made to the game, or is it too soon to start thinking about that?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, I think kids need to work more on their skill level than they do on their athleticism. You know, and unfortunately, we're in an era where, you know, you turn on ESPN, you'd play, if you look at the top 10 plays of the day, they're all dunks.
That's right.
You know, they're not jump shots, and kids are impressionable. You know, so I think, you know, first of all, I think kids, you know, coming up through the ranks, they got to work on their skills more than they do on, you know, being able to get more athletic and get a dunk. Because you dunk the ball once or twice a game, and that's it. You know, maybe, if you're lucky. You know, and so I think that's part of it. I think some too is overcoaching. I know that sounds bad, but I think sometimes coaches, look, they don't give kids freedom to play. You know, Dory's a good example. So. I mean, I think the staff there's decided, okay, let's give him some, you know, give him some freedom to play and make plays. And you know, that's what we do here offensively. We give our kids, we hold them accountable defensively, but we give them the opportunity to make plays on offense. You know, and not be looking over at the bench when they miss a shot. You know, and I think some coaches just overcoach. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm definitely not saying that's what Coach Martin's doing. I'm just saying in general, you know, when you see teams that don't score, a lot of times it's because there's no freedom to play. Let them make plays. You know, give them some space to make plays. And you know, I think sometimes we just try to wire it down too much. You know, I think the college game is a lot about the coach, and the NBA game is a lot about the player. And that's probably why they score more in the league. Be honest with you.
Steve Forbes is always tremendously interesting to visit with. He's down at Northwest Florida State Junior College right now, and he's doing great things there. A tremendous article in the New York Times if you want to check it out that I've linked to at TonyBasilio.com today. And we're proud of his success and appreciate him taking a few for us today on the program. You know, you talk about that. I think even Konzo Martin would admit, in fact, he admitted to me a couple weeks ago, hey, look, I've always wanted to have a team that can score and you know, do the things that we're doing right now. They got to a point in the season where they had an embarrassing home loss to Georgia, and then they completely changed their approach defensively, started to gamble more, offensively let their kids play, as you say, and be more creative. And it's almost like those kids woke up and said, okay, now we don't have to worry about taking a bad shot, missing an assignment on defense, whatever it is. But you know, to me, that's the mark of a coach who will look in the mirror and go, yeah, listen, I'll give you a back up here. I had last week on the program, we had Dave Odom on with us, who I love. And Dave said, look, he said, as coaches, we look to players all the time and we say, you need to change. You need to change this. You need to stop doing this. You need to start doing this. He said, when coaches are able to do that, he said, kids respect the heck out of them. When you can change in midstream and say, what we're doing here is not working, instead of just going down with the ship, because we all know guys who are stubborn, and there's something to be said about changing, isn't there?
Mark of a really, really, really good coach and somebody who's pretty sure of themselves, you know, I think it's wonderful. I mean, I think teams, Tony, every day, every week are getting better or getting worse.
I
tell my
right.
team that all the time. Hey, today we could get better or we could get worse. Your team is constantly evolving, constantly changing, and you're constantly trying to find the right way and if you're stuck in one gear, you're never going to beat, you're probably never going to find it. And I give Coach Martin a lot of credit because I noticed it, you know, a lot. I'm not so much defensively because I think they've always been solid, but I think what I noticed more was just kids had a little bit more freedom, felt a little bit more freedom to make some plays early in the shot clock, to attack the basket. You know, they always shared it pretty good, but you know, sometimes you can overpass it. Sometimes you just got to go make the play. And I think that, I think they did a really good job of that, and I agree wholeheartedly with what Dave has to say. I think you always got to change. You know, like, you got to let loose with some, you know, you got to give them some freedom. You know, like Jason calls all the plays here offensively. I don't, half the time, I don't even know what we're running. I got to ask him, well, what are we running? You know, I think, but I trust him. You know, I trust him because that's what he's great at. And so the same thing with the players, you know, you got to trust them. And when they know you do, they'll play for you. And I think Bruce was really good at that. I think Coach Pearl got kids to believe in
him. Right.
And to believe in the way we played. And I think that's why you saw a lot of success on the court, because they had a lot of freedom to play, and they never felt, they always felt like some coaches will go on the road, Tony, and they'll play different than they do at home because, oh, it's on the road. We got to wire it down. You know, we got to pass the ball more. We got to keep it close. Coach Pearl never talked about that. We always played one way, and that was wide open. Wide open.
And, you know, the funnest time to me of the Pearl era is when you guys were playing that full court game and you just,
yeah,
it was like, look, we don't care what gym we're in. We don't care what you have. We don't care if it's Ohio State. We don't care if it's this team. We don't care if it's that team. We are going to play you this way, and we're going to force you to play the way we're playing. Now, you might beat us. You might beat us down the court. You might score 20 easy points today, but we're going to play this way.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's imposing your will on somebody. You know, and that's just a style of play and a system of play that you believe in, and that's how we're going to play. I think what happened, and I think rightfully so, I think what happens, though, is you get to the big stage. You know, you get to that Sweet 16 round, and you start to figure out, how can we get to the next step? How do we get to the next level? How do we get to the Final Four? How do we win a national championship? And I think, you know, I think what we did is we figured out, you know, we've got to become even better. Not that we were terrible, we had to get even better in the half-court defense, and we got to get some bigger wings and guards, because as great as players as Lofton and Smith were, you know, they still were challenged vertically, you know. And what happened was, you found in the Louisville game, in the Sweet 16, you know, they zoned this, and Earl Clark's out there at 6'8", you know, guarding Chris Lofton, and it was hard for him to get shots. And so, you know, I think we evolved a little bit philosophically just based upon the stage that we wanted to play on. The next stage was to win the national title.
Really interesting conversation here with Steve Forbes today on the program. One other global question for you, and then we'll bring it back home on the way out. Where are the point guards in today's game? What's happened to that position?
Wow. Yeah, I get a ton of calls about that, you know, every day. I still get calls, you know, for our league, hey, who's got a good point guard? That's a great question. I don't know. I guess it's a feel. You know, a lot of kids just, they don't have the feel to make players better around them. It's, you know, it's, I hate to say it like this, but kids are kind of selfish. You know, it's a selfish, you know, and the point guard position is not a selfish position. You have to get others involved. You have to understand the game. You have to, you know, you have to be a coach on the floor, an extension of the coach. And there are not a lot of those. That's why I'm so blessed to have the one that I have. And I, you know, somebody asked me, well, who are you going to get to replace him? I said, well, I'm not. What do you mean? I said, well, I'm not going to have another player like him next year. Those guys don't come around. I mean, I've coached a long time, 24 years. I probably have never coached a kid more competitive than him. That's his biggest attribute. It's not his ball handling. It's not his shooting. It's not his passing. It's his will to win is just incredible. And I've never seen anything like it, and that's why we're 57-4, because we have the best point guard, and that's why, you know, everybody in the country was trying to get him, because they saw it. And, you know, and I saw it when he was young. You know, he wasn't the most highly recruited guy, you know, because Joe Jackson got all the attention.
Right.
He just consistently kicked Joe Jackson's butt. You know, and then when you start seeing that over and over and over, you go, oh, man, what's wrong with this guy? He's a freaking player, you know. And so, you know, I answer your question, Tony. I don't know. I mean, they're just not out there. There's not a lot of great ones. And when you got one, you better hold on to them.
Well, here's my thing. Not only is there not a lot of great ones, what really confuses me, though, is every March, or, you know, I've got DirecTV, so I'm watching games from all over the place at night, and I'll see smaller schools that have. And I'm not going to knock the guys that I see at Tennessee, but I'm just talking about the guys that play in this league. I'll see guys at smaller schools that are better point guards, more solid players than the ones you see here. And we see it in March all the time. And here's my question to you. How do certain guys end up in these big leagues and certain guys end up there? And they tell me it's because physically, like you were just saying, maybe a guy's a little shorter or whatever it is. But yet in March, this kid from Ohio, who I went down to Nashville and saw last year in person, can go heads up and beat somebody who was supposedly ranked 80 spots higher than him in recruiting. I mean, how does that work?
Well, because I think because of what you said, there's a lot of lazy recruiting in all over the country, and it's because based upon there's so many of these sites, the Rivals, the Scout, the Dave Pellup, there's hundreds. These guys all have lists. And there's so many guys that recruit off lists instead of going and doing, like I like to say, the show me state. I'm not from Missouri, but I'm from Iowa. You know, show me what you got. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to watch a kid play, and he's supposed to be a highly ranked kid, and you go, that kid's not a very good player. You know, I mean, just based on a five, that's why I don't get caught up in, okay, five-star, four-star, I mean, yeah. Sometimes there's five-star guys are hard to miss on. Okay, yeah, I can tell John Wall's a pretty good player, so can you.
Yeah.
You know, but the rest of the time, like Chris Jones, I mean, you got to go watch, and you got to evaluate, you know, and kids like, sometimes those kids, like you're saying, you know, whoever that kid was at that school, they just did a good job of finding him, you know, and not just going off, you know, hey, I could call up Dave, and Dave's a good personal friend of mine. I say, Dave, give me the top 10 point guards of 2014. Well, that's his opinion, okay? And then I'd go recruit those 10 guys, and I'd probably get one. But that doesn't mean that those 10 guys are the best 10 point guards in the country. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that's Dave's opinion. You know, but I think you see a lot of that kind of recruiting going on, especially nowadays. Not so much when I started because there wasn't any of those. There's very few of those guys. You know, there was Bob Gibbons and Tom Kachowski, and you could name them on your hand, and that was it. But now there's all kinds of them. Or you can go on the Internet every day and click on a link and see who the alleged top guys are, and I think that's how guys recruit. I really do.
And that's scary. I mean, if you think about it, you're letting...
Well, that's what I used to say to Bruce. You know, coaches sometimes would say, and bless his heart, I appreciate this. Coach didn't really, he never got on a computer. So I didn't have to deal with that, you know.
That's great.
Hey, what about this guy? You know, what about Joe says about this guy? He wasn't one of those guys, but every once in a while, you know, you get into that situation where, say, Van Coleman said, hey, Van Coleman told me, well, so I said, Coach, who do you trust more, me or Van Coleman? You know, I mean, that's kind of what you get down to sometimes in those meetings. I'm sure football gets the same. I guarantee you football the same way a lot of times, you know, based on who their people are and who they trust. Now, I got some people I really trust. But those people that I trust in that business are former coaches, are guys that have been in my shoes.
Amen.
I trust those guys now. I got a couple, three of those, and I won't give them up because they're my guys. But I trust those guys because they've walked in my shoes. And so, you know, I believe that. I could, now, you know what? Some may come on tomorrow and say, oh, he's full. You know, that's not true. That's what I believe, and that's what I see, especially the younger guys coming through the business. You know, I don't think they learned. The best days I've ever had recruiting were the days I went to a tournament and I didn't know one player that was going to be there. I just went and watched. And you know what? Some days there's not a good player there. That's the other thing. Sometimes you can go to a bad event, and there are bad players there, and you move on. You don't, just because you showed up to the tournament doesn't mean there's a player that's good enough for you to recruit either. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. No, that's right. It's just a weird deal, because even when you guys had it tremendously going here, mm-hmm. finding that point guard always seemed elusive. Now, you know, in credit to you, though, you had Selby on the hook, who was...
Well, let's just say, yeah, I mean, we were in a position at one point to be really good there. I mean, at one point,
oh, no question.
Josh
no
Aaron
question.
Committed.
Kraft,
you know,
I mean, come on.
We were in good shape, and we were going to get Chris Jones. And so we had three fabulous point guards lined up. Now, you know, it fell apart. You know, and thank God, you know, Trey... You know, we were able to get Trey. I don't think it was how hard it was just to get him because we hadn't recruited a point guard in a year. I mean, it's not like football. I mean, you get your point guard, you know, Josh and Aaron committed as juniors early, and so it was like, you don't keep recruiting point guards. I mean, you're done in that class because no kid's going to listen to you anyway. And so to have to retool in July going into the kid's senior year, I mean, I tried to jump back in on Trevor Relaford as hard as I could because I had a relationship with Trevor. I just couldn't get him. And I didn't blame him. He's like, where you been? Well, you had Josh Selby and Aaron Kraft. He's right. We did.
It really makes it hard
when that happens. And so we were in position to have three really good ones. I mean, really good ones. And it just fell apart.
I'm out of time, but I really appreciate your passion and just your level of intelligence when we talk. And I really appreciate your time, man. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on. I miss you guys. And, you know, Jason and I are, you know, we're doing fine and having fun. We get to see a lot of Knoxville friends come this direction. And
there you go.
Anytime people come this way, stop here at the Yule, and stop here at the school and come in and say hello.
And Jay Shea's got a suntan. You got to love it, man.
Oh, that's scary. Golly, don't even talk about that. He needs some lotion on him, trust me. A lot of lotion.
Hey, Coach, have a Doc Gooden and best of luck. Continue doing what you're doing.
All right, bud, thanks.
All right, man. Steve Forbes, one more time.